So today, titled the split sermon is Who is Satan and How Can We Overcome Him? You know, if some sort of problem arises or, you know, something's wrong, it's best to understand, if we're going to try to fix it, that what is causing that problem? And in business world, they call it a root cause analysis or whatever. But we want to get to the bottom of it. What is causing the problem that's affecting us? For example, like to cure an ailment, doctors need to go beyond treating symptoms. They have to understand what is causing those symptoms, and they have to address the underlying conditions. Now, for us personally, every day we face the problems of sin in our lives. So it's good for us to remember that the Bible teaches us that it is Satan who is the source of sin. So given that, we need to understand what Satan is, we understand who he is, so that we have a better understanding of the approach that we can take to remove any influence that he has on our lives. Now the question is, especially if you look at the society around us, is Satan just some sort of mythological figure in human tales representing the struggle between good versus evil? Or is he a real? Is he active in the affairs of humanity? You know, a lot's been written about this character. At one extreme, some people deny that he even exists. While at the other end of this spectrum, some people actually worship him. But what does the Bible tell us about who and what Satan is, and how he is affecting our lives and the lives of all humanity? So today, let's review that. Review what we know about Satan, about what he is, who he is, and how it's possible for us to overcome this real and powerful adversary. So the question is Satan real? Well, according to the Bible, yes, he's very real. Satan isn't just some symbol for evil. 7 Old Testament books and all 27 New Testament books refer directly to Satan. He's a prominent character. We need to understand that. We don't want to take it for granted that he's real. What is Satan? Well, Satan was created as an angel of God, and he was given special position of responsibility. We can see that as we turn here to Ezekiel 28 and verses 14 and 15. We'll see similar things in Isaiah later on, but here in Ezekiel 28, verses 14 and 15, we see the following is recorded about Satan. Ezekiel 28:14, "You were the anointed cherub who covers. I established you. You were on the holy mountain of God. You walked back and forth in the midst of the fiery stones. You were perfect in your ways from the day you were created till iniquity was found in you." So Satan is an angel. He was created by God. He's a spirit being. As an angel, he's a spirit being. Paul calls Satan the spirit who now works in the sons of disobedience. He is immortal. He is around still to this day. From the time he is created, he's still alive and active now and until finally God restrains it. We do know that he is one of 3 ranking angels that are mentioned in the Bible. They're called cherubs. They covered the throne of God, signifying that these higher ranked angels were involved in the administration of God's government. For a description of that, go back into Exodus 25 and we see concerning the instructions for the construction of the mercy seat for the tabernacle. You see the 2 cherubs above the mercy seat, covering the throne. So a cherub is a special high-ranking angel that God created. We do know of three of them. Gabriel, who appears to be a chief messenger for delivering news from God. Michael, who's called the chief prince and is specifically assigned to protect and minister to Israel and the church. And then there's Lucifer, who later became known as Satan. He was created perfect and blameless. He was called Lucifer, the star of the morning, or the bringer of light. He was an anointed cherub and was given charge over the earth. But eventually, he chose to rebel against God and was powerfully cast away from the throne of God. We can see that here in Ezekiel 28 and Isaiah 14. And in Luke 10, Christ said, "I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven," being referring to the time when Satan rebelled against God and lost. So we've seen what Satan is. An amazing, powerful, creative spirit being. He's an angel of God. But what can we learn about who he is? Because that's just as important to understand. The Bible shows us a number of different ways that Satan is real. He's not this imaginary symbol talking about evil. He's real. He's present. Some of the ways it shows that Satan is real is that he speaks. When he came to test Jesus in the wilderness, we see that in Matthew 4 and Luke 4, he was talking to Jesus. When he deceived Eve, he was speaking to her. Now, some may claim that, well, this is just a story, it's either a vision or a hallucination, but no, this was real. And the Bible shows us there are other ways that Satan is real. He has an intellect, and he has a will of his own. He's able to scheme and devise plans, specifically trying to entrap us, to turn us away from God. Paul shows us that Satan has a will of his own, and Satan tries to get us to follow his will. He sets snares for us, traps that we need to be aware of, we need to be careful about. That, because if we're not careful, we might fall into those traps. Let me just read to you 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 26. We won't need to turn there, but this is what Paul says in 2 Timothy 2:26. Talking about those who are in opposition to God, he says, "And that they may come to their senses and escape the snare of the devil, having been taken captive by him to do his will." Satan devises these traps, these snares. He has this will that he wants us to follow, that will being something that is in opposition to God is. Another way in which Satan is real, is not just a symbol, is he has emotions. He displays emotions. Some of the ones that are most prominent are anger, pride, arrogance. Let's take a look at Revelation 12 and verse 12. We can see that Satan has wrath and is going to be getting worse, not better. Revelation 12:12. Breaking into a future event when Satan once again rebels against God. Revelation 12:12 says, "Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil has come down to you having great wrath, because he knows that he has a short time." Satan is angry. He's always angry. And that anger is going to increase, and it will be directed at us at any opportunity that he has. Satan is also filled with pride. We see that again as we look back at Ezekiel 28. Going back there again. Ezekiel 28 and verse 17. Satan, when you see the description of him, he was the pinnacle of creation. He was full of wisdom and beauty. But we see something here in Ezekiel 28, verse 17. He let that wisdom, he let that beauty go to his head, so to speak. He let his grandeur and his appointed position to puff him up, to lift himself up. And he thought more highly of himself than he should have. Ezekiel 28:17, you see this. Your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. You corrupted your wisdom for the sake of your splendor. I cast you to the ground. I laid you before kings that they might gaze on you. So we see just some examples here of the emotions that Satan displays as a real, definitive being. We also know that Satan can walk around. You know, go back to the book of Job. It's just one example. God says to Satan, where have you been? Oh, just walking to and fro on the earth. But he walks. You can also be restrained. But Satan also has desires. And his chief desire is that he wants to be the ruler of creation. He wants to be worshipped as if he were God Almighty. We see that in Luke chapter 4 when he's testing Jesus. Luke chapter 4, verses 6 through 7. Look what we see here. Satan is talking to Jesus. Luke 4, starting chapter 6. And the devil said to him, all this authority I will give to you, I will give you, and their glory. For this has been delivered to me, and I give it to whomever I wish. Therefore, if you will worship before me, all will be yours. He wants to be worshipped. This also shows how arrogant his thinking is. I mean, look who he's talking to. He's talking to the Word of God, the very one who gave him all these kingdoms. And he's saying, hey, I can give this to you if you worship me. He's still trying to place himself above the family of God. To get a better understanding of the character that Satan has, who he is, what he's doing and stuff, there are a lot of names that are used within the Bible to refer to Satan. We'll go through some of them and I'll read just a bunch of others just to give you an idea of who we're dealing with. Of character that we're up against. First one is adversary. The word Satan itself is the Hebrew word which means adversary. He opposes God. And as he opposes God, think about this. He is also opposing us. He's against us drawing any nearer to God. In fact, Peter's first epistle, 1 Peter verse 5, chapter 5, verse 8, he reminds us of this. And it's something we don't want to forget. We can't take it for granted. 1 Peter 5, 8 says, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks around like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. He isn't just against God. He is our adversary too, and will do what he can to work against us. Another set of names that are used for Satan is Abaddon, Apollyon, Angel of the Bottomless Pit. We see that in Revelation 9:11. I'll read that to you. We don't need to turn there. Revelation 9:11. And they had as king over them the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in Hebrew is Abaddon, but in Greek he has the name Apollyon. The Greek name Apollyon is literally a rendering of the Hebrew word Abaddon. the term in Hebrew is kind of an abstract term, but what it really boils down to is it means destruction. That is what Satan wants to do. He wants to destroy everything. Everything that God has put into place, which includes us. So you got a bad Napoleon, angel of the bottomless pit. He's also called the accuser of our brethren. He's right there when we do something wrong, not if, when. He's right there standing before God saying, look what they did. You've really called them? You think they're worthy? He's right there ready to accuse us. He's called Beelzebub. Beelzebub is the name that was used for the patron god of the Philistines. He's also identified with the god of Ekron, Baal-zebub. Basically, in the Bible, Beelzebub is the prince of evil spirits. Another one, Paul in 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 15 writes the following. And what accord has Christ with Belial? Or what part has a believer with an unbeliever? So another word for Satan is Belial. And what does that mean? I mean, these are words that we obviously don't use in our everyday conversation. But what does it mean? It's an interesting point that Belial is Hebrew for without value. Stop and think what that means. Anything that Satan represents has no value for us. Because he opposes God, there is no value in what he has to offer. We need to turn to God and we need to draw to him. There are a number of others. I'll just read through them quickly. As you hear them, it gives you kind of help to round out the character, the mindset, and the actions that he is involved with. A number of other names that are used for him: the devil, a dragon, serpent, the enemy, evil spirit, a lying spirit, the father of lies, a liar, a murderer. He's the power of darkness, prince of this world, the god of this world, the prince of devils, prince of the power of the air, a spirit that works in the children of disobedience. He's a ruler of the darkness of this world, the tempter, the thief, the unclean spirit, the wicked one. That gives us an idea of who we're up against here, what his character is, what his goals are, and what he's trying to do against us as our adversary. So we've seen what and who Satan is. But it's important to understand Satan and the effect that he has on our lives every single day. What is it that Satan does that has such a profound influence on us? Again, going back to the fact that he was the appointed ruler of this world, and he rebelled against God. He's still the ruler of this world. But at some point after God had appointed Lucifer, as we saw, his mind became corrupted. He corrupted his wisdom. He was filled with pride in his position. So he actually decided, I'm pretty good here. I should be the one to replace God as Almighty and ruler of everything. And his mind became so twisted, so perverted, that he actually believed he could replace God. Let me read to you from Isaiah 14 and verses 13 and 14. In Isaiah 14, verses 13 and 14, we read, God's talking to us, for Satan here says, for you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit on the mount of the congregation on the farthest sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. That's the mindset, the mind frame of who Satan is and what he's trying to accomplish here. Because he still wants to dethrone God and take over this universe. But to make it worse, Satan chose to follow this path. When he did so, and corrupting his wisdom, means he became filled with resentment, bitterness, anger, all forms of evil. But he didn't stop there. However it is he did, with his twisted mind and with his warped perspective, Satan used whatever means of his persuasion and deception he could, and he managed to convince one-third of the angels to join him in rebelling against God. That gives you an idea of the power of his deception and persuasion. That a third of the angels believes him instead of believing God. And so in doing so, they've set up this kingdom of darkness, this kingdom of evil here on earth. So instead of being a bringer of light, the kingdom of Satan is characterized by darkness. And that's what we're up against. Look what Paul writes, turn there, in Ephesians chapter 6 and in verse 12. Paul gives us a clear warning of what we're struggling against. Ephesians 6 and verse 12. Paul states, "For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places." And as Jesus reminded the Pharisees in John 8, verse 44, let me go ahead and read that to you. "You are of your father, the devil, and the desires of your father you want to do. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in truth because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources, for he is a liar and the father of it." This is the personality of the one who leads this kingdom of darkness on the earth right now. And what's amazing is that given everything that has already happened, his mind is so twisted and perverted that he still thinks he can overthrow God. And we see that again alluded to in Revelation 12, where in spite of already failing once at doing this, he's so filled with wrath and envy that he's still working to try to once again overthrow God. Gives you an idea of who Satan is, what he is, and what he's trying to do. And so having reviewed that, what are we supposed to do? Well, Paul gives us some very clear instructions. Let's take a look at that in Romans chapter 12 and verse 21. Romans 12, verse 21, Paul makes a statement here, very succinct, very to the point. Romans 12:21, "Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." Sounds simple, doesn't it? Yeah, sounds simple. But as we've seen, given who we're up against on our own, we have no chance. And it would seem as if it's a futile effort. How do we overcome Satan, who, as an angel, is greater in power and might than we are? Peter reminds us of that in his second epistle, that angels are greater in power and might. How do we overcome someone like this? Well, the answer to that question, it gives us hope, gives us a way to do this, comes from something that Jesus told his disciples on that last night before his crucifixion. So let's turn back and take a look at that. In John 16 and verses 31 through 33. Consider what Jesus told his disciples that night. John 16 and verse 31 through 33. They're having a discussion here about various things. One of them says, "Now we believe you." John 16, starting verse 31. Jesus answered them, "Do you now believe? Indeed, the hour is coming, yes, has now come, that you will be scattered, each to his own, and will leave me alone. And yet, I am not alone, because the Father is with me. These things I have spoken to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world." Notice what he said here. He didn't say, you might face some troubles, maybe you'll have tribulation. No, he clearly, right up front, said, you will have tribulation. And why is that? Well, it's because Satan still rules the society of this age. And he is working however he can to prevent us from drawing close to God. He's going to do what he can. Whatever form that tribulation might take, if he can use it, he will. He doesn't want us drawing near to God. So because of that, because he's still a temporary ruler in this age, he rules over the nations of this world. This, a lot of people don't even acknowledge this. The church has been shown this. God's opened our minds to let us understand what's really going on here. But Jesus and Paul, in various points in the New Testament, make it clear that the ruler of this age is still Satan. Let's take a look at John chapter 12. We're here. John chapter 12 and verses 27 through 33. Starting here in verse 27 of John 12. "Now my soul is troubled. And what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. But for this purpose I came to this hour. Father, glorify your name." Then a voice came from heaven saying, "I have both glorified it and will glorify it again." Therefore the people who stood by and heard it said that it had thundered. Others said, "An angel has spoken to him." And Jesus answered and said, "This voice did not come because of me, but for your sake. Now is the judgment of this world. Now the ruler of this world will be cast out. And I, if I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all peoples to myself." This he says, signifying by what death he would die. But Jesus confirms here that Satan is still the ruler of this world's societies. But Satan also, he doesn't do it alone. He also is the ruler of the demons. So with their aid, he does various things here within the nations, within the people of the earth. Whatever relation the demons and Satan have, and I don't know exactly what it is, I would assume it's something based on a power struggle position, who's strongest rules. But there's one thing that they're united in. They're united in their opposition to God. Look what Christ said to the Pharisees in Luke chapter 11, verses 14 through 18. Luke 11, verses 14 through 18, starting in verse 14. And he was casting out a demon, and it was mute. So it was, when the demon had gone out, that the mute spoke, and the multitudes marveled. But some of them said, he casts out demons by Beelzebub, the ruler of the demons. And others, testing him, sought him from him a sign from heaven. But he, knowing their thoughts, said to them, every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation, and a house divided against a house falls. If Satan also is divided against himself, how will his kingdom stand? Because you say, I cast out demons by Beelzebub. So whatever the relationships the demons and Satan have, they're united in their opposition to God, their hatred, their wrath towards God. We know that Satan opposes everything that God plans. He's the adversary. He opposes God continually and at every opportunity. Hence, we will have tribulation. Satan works to thwart God's plan for humanity. He doesn't want humans to be elevated into members of God's family, because that was never offered to him. So because of that, he does what he can do to hinder the work of God. We see that alluded to in Mark 4, verse 15. Christ is explaining the parable of the sower to his disciples, because they didn't quite get it either. So he's explaining the parable of the sower here in Mark 4, 15, breaking into this explanation. He states, verse 15, and these are the ones by the wayside, where the word was sown. When they hear, Satan comes immediately and takes away the word that was sown in their hearts. He doesn't want humanity to understand God's word, to understand the truth about who Satan is, what he's trying to do, and what God has to offer for us. So he's right there immediately to snatch that away. He's trying to hinder God's plans. And because of the different trials and tribulations that we have to go through, we see, we understand that Satan is a very resourceful opponent. He's extremely resourceful, and he's a cunning adversary whose ultimate goal is to deny salvation to mankind by deceiving every one of us, to lead us astray, to entice us to sin and work against God and turning us against God. That's what he's doing right now, and we need to be aware of that. Look what Paul said to the Corinthians in the second epistle, 2 Corinthians chapter 2 and verses 10 and 11. Paul's reminding us here again that Satan will take any opportunity he can get. Here in 2 Corinthians chapter 2, starting in verse 10, now whom you forgive anything, I also forgive. For if indeed I have forgiven anything, I have forgiven that one for your sakes in the presence of Christ. Lest Satan should take advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his devices. We can't afford to be ignorant of his devices, because he will take advantage in any way, in any opportunity that he gets. He will try to trip us up, he'll try to snare us, and then he'll accuse us to God. So any opportunity he has that he can use to turn our minds away from God, if we're bitter, angry, envious, resentful, or any other emotion that we might have that are centered on ourselves, is right there, waiting to influence us, to use that against us, and to turn that, and to turn us away from God. And sometimes, even when we're just plain tired, mentally, physically, that's still an opportunity to Satan. Ah, they're not thinking clearly right now. They're worn out. They don't have the guard up. Now's my chance. He's waiting there like that roaring lion Peter referred to. He's waiting right there to pounce and to turn that, those feelings and stuff against us and against God. But it seems like as part of the tribulations that we face, that one of Satan's most powerful devices, as Paul says we are aware of, is the fact that he is a deceiver. A lot of times something may look good on the surface, but we need to start thinking of things from God's perspective. Satan was the father of lies, and there is no truth in him. So deception comes very easily to him. Satan deceives the whole world, as do the demons who are working with him. Again, going back to 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 13 through 15. Paul again gives this warning, basically saying, don't be deceived. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, 13 through 15. For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers also transform themselves into ministers of righteousness, whose end will be according to their works. Deception. This device that he uses a lot. Let me read to you Revelation 20, verses 7 and 8. We're looking at the time frame at the end of the millennium. Revelation 20, verse 7 and 8. Now, when 1,000 years have expired, Satan will be released from his prison and will go out to deceive the nations which are in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, whose number is the sea of the sand. This gives us a clue. In addition to having deceived a third of the angels, this also gives us a clue to how powerful Satan's deception is. At the end of the millennium, think about this situation. Never in the history of mankind will there have been such peace and prosperity. People have never had it so good. And yet, what happens? At his release, Satan somehow convinces people that God's not treated them fairly, and they need to go and take what they deserve and what is rightfully theirs. We must never underestimate how Satan can use what is happening in our lives to deceive us, to turn us away from God, to not recognize what God is offering to us. Peter also gives us this warning in 2 Peter chapter 2 and verses 1 and 3. 2 Peter chapter 2 verses 1 through 3. But there also But there were also false prophets among the people, even as there will be false teachers among you, who will secretly bring in destructive heresies, even denying the Lord who bought them, and bring on themselves swift destruction. And many will follow their destructive ways, because of whom the way of truth will be blasphemed. By covetousness they will exploit you with deceptive words. For a long time their judgment not been idle, and their destruction does not slumber. Satan indeed is a powerful being, and so we have to wonder, how could we possibly defend ourselves against his might, his power, his ways of deception? Doesn't seem possible, does it? But it is. As Jesus told his disciple, we have hope in what he said. Jesus, as a human, resisted and overcame the power of Satan. Again, he said, be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. And in overcoming the world, he also overcame Satan, qualifying as king. As long as we are in Jesus Christ, working with him. Because you see, Satan and his demons still have to submit to the authority of God, and they have to stay within the boundaries that God sets for them. Think about the consequences if that were not true. If they didn't have boundaries placed on them, Satan would have destroyed every one of us by now. But God says, no, you cannot. I mean, look at the example we see in Job. He says, you do this to him, but no more. Satan had to abide by God's restrictions. So we have hope because of what God does for us. We too can overcome Satan if we're close to God, if we have the Spirit of Christ working in us. Consider what James tells us in James chapter 4, verses 7 through 8. James chapter 4, verses 7 through 8. James states here, therefore submit to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts, you double-minded. Now it's interesting here, looking at James's instructions here in verse 7. Submit to God, resist the devil. Look at the ordering there. Notice he doesn't tell us the first thing to do is to resist Satan. We can't do that. On our own, we cannot do that. So the first thing that we have to do if we want to overcome Satan is we have to submit to God. There is no other way. We have to draw near to God, to learn his ways, come closer to him, to be in his protection. So once we draw near to God, we do that first. Then we could choose to resist Satan. And when we do that, being close to God, we choose to resist Satan and say, no, I'm aware of your devices. I'm aware of what you're trying to do. I'm aware that you're trying to turn me away from God. I do not want to do that. By the strength of being with God, by the Spirit of Christ in me, I'm resisting you. And what does James say? If you do that, Satan will flee. He has no choice. He's limited by God as to what he can do. And so as Satan learns that we are not going to rebel against God like he did, then we can have that peace in Christ that we were promised. So what does the Bible tell us about Satan? Satan is an angel that God created to rule over this world and over a third of the angels. But however, through his own pride, his twisted thinking, he transformed himself into the adversary of God and into our enemy. He's temporarily still the ruler of this world. And he's a powerful being who's bent on thwarting God's plan and destroying us. On our own, we'd have no hope to stand against him. But we're not on our own. Jesus Christ was there. We do have hope because Jesus Christ overcame Satan. So when we draw close to God, through the strength of the Spirit that Christ has in us, we can resist Satan. We can endure to the end and overcome him and his ways. So being aware of the source of sin and aware of his devices can help us in our efforts to continue to put sin out of our lives, to remove Satan's influence, so that we may live by the righteousness of God and be part of the kingdom of God for all eternity.